Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. You may have heard this before, but it's 30 years since Liverpool won the English title. In fact, 30 years to the very day. Stevie Nicol will be joining us a little later on for his reflections on that victory. We'll also be taking a stroll down memory lane with Ali and Sid, looking back at that extraordinary game at the Camp Nou. Remember, semi-final of the Champions League, Inter Milan against Barcelona, Guardiola against Mourinho, the celebrations from Mourinho afterwards, the sprinklers coming on. We'll be getting their memories of that. But first, we start in France. Big news today. Now, just a reminder, this is how the table looked before play was suspended. There was a meeting today talking about when football would resume. The government making the announcement as we welcome in Frank Leboeuf. Frank then saying that there will be no football, be it behind closed doors or anything, until September. This is a big surprise, isn't it?
It is, Dan, it is. And we are all very shocked about that decision because supposedly the government took the decision on its own, meaning that they didn't talk to the board of the Ligue 1, to the 20 chairmen of the Ligue 1, and took that decision where they could have been... a time where you can think about and see how the virus and all the pandemic goes on, and maybe start a little bit later in June or end of June the championship and finish the season. They took that decision. It's surprising because now we don't know what's going to happen. Who's going to be champion? Who's going to be qualified for the Champions League? Who's going to be relegated? Who's going to be promoted? Those questions, we don't have answers. We have to wait for now the board of the Ligue 1 to decide whether they're going to stop at the day 28 or the day 27 because Paris Saint-Germain didn't play against Strasbourg on the last day, or maybe just the first 18 games of the season and they didn't count the return games. So we don't have all answers. And again, we're very surprised because it's going to be very hard for some clubs. I think about Amiens, who has 19 now, but only 3 or 4 points behind Nîmes, and could have hoped for a continuation of the championship and be saved because you have 13 points in games. In games. So it's a hard decision that the government took, socially as well, because we know how the people in France love football and want to see football, but they're not going to see football and soccer before September.
And Frank, a lot of people asking me to ask you, what's going to happen with the Champions League? PSG and Lyon, of course, still involved. The plan from UEFA, from what we've discussed and what we understand, is that it could be played over that 20-day period in August. If you can't have football in France, what's going to happen?
It's going to be complicated for Paris Saint-Germain. And a friend of mine talked to Nasser El Khelaifi, Paris Saint-Germain chairman, who said that he's going to follow what the government says, but he's going to follow also what the UEFA says. And meaning that if the Champions League is held in July or August and they have to finish it, they're going to finish it. They're going to go abroad to play some maybe friendly games to prepare all the game they have to play in the Champions League, starting from the quarterfinal, because they got qualified against Borussia Dortmund, and they want to finish it. It's a big opportunity for Paris Saint-Germain to be a champion of the Champions League this season. But if they don't play the regular season of the Ligue 1, I don't know how they can be fit and competitive in the Champions League.
Yeah, that's obviously an issue. As a former player, you know that, Frank. You need some sort of match fitness. You can't just roll in to the quarterfinals of the Champions League expecting to hit the ground running.
Exactly. It's not a lottery. And we all know that when we are injured or when we are in a preseason, if we don't play real games, not only friendly games, but real games with a big competition, we cannot be ready. That's a big factor. And it's a big damage for Paris Saint-Germain. And I don't know how it's going to jeopardize the future of Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League, but some players must be very disappointed with that decision because, again, it was a big opportunity for Paris Saint-Germain to win the Champions League this season. They had the squad for that. but it might end in the quarterfinal for Paris Saint-Germain, because if they don't play in the Ligue 1, they won't be ready, I think, for the Champions League.
And we can't forget Lyon either, Frank.
Yes, of course it goes for Lyon. Lyon is also in a different position for the Ligue 1, because they are 7 in the table, but on the day 28, but on the day 27 they were 5th. So qualified for the UEFA, the Europa League, sorry. And so, because Paris Saint-Germain didn't play against Strasbourg, sorry, it's getting complicated. Jean-Michel Aulas, the Lyon chairman, wants to, if the Ligue 1 has to be stopped, wants to be stopped the day 27, the day before. So it's complicated for Lyon. It's complicated also for Lyon in the Champions League, because they have to play the return game against Juventus. They didn't play. Mm-hmm. And if they don't have any games in Ligue 1, it's going to be almost impossible for Lyon to get qualified.
We saw in Holland, didn't we, the Eredivisie saying, right, that is it. The season's voided. There will be no champions. There will be no relegation. These teams, Ajax, will go into the group stages of the Champions League. AZ will go into the playoffs. Is that something that you think will happen in France as well? No relegation, no promotion, no champions.
Well, it's not what I heard. It's a possibility, of course, and I think it will be better for everybody, except the two promoted in League 2. We're going to stay in League 2. But I think it's very unfair to relegate Amiens, Toulouse, and maybe Nîmes if we stay where we are. I don't really care about the champion. Paris Saint-Germain has been a champion for years. And it's more tricky for the qualified of the Champions League and the Europa League. But it's only positive answers. I'm more into negative answers, where Amiens, for example, 4 points behind Nîmes, could be relegated. And relegation means people losing their jobs in the office of Amiens' board. And that's a problem for me.
Frank Leboeuf, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, interesting stuff from UEFA, saying the national associations and all leagues should be in a position to communicate to UEFA by May the 25th the planned restart of their domestic competitions, including the date of restart and the relevant competition format. Well, I want to welcome in Gab Marcotti to talk about two very differing approaches that we're seeing from Germany and Italy about how they would handle a player coming out and testing positive. For Germany, that player would have to go into isolation for 14 days. Suggestions, though, in Italy, not only it be the player, but all of his teammates and anyone he's been in contact with, Gab. And surely if the Italians go down that route, there's absolutely no way they're going to be able to complete this season.
Yeah, so what you're saying is the people who are saying that the entire team has to go into isolation for 14 days, we should make this very clear. It's not Serie A, it's not the Italian League or the Italian FA who are saying this. It's the government who are saying this, because they have weighed in on this. It's not a definitive opinion, but it is opinion of the medical specialists, and they're going to have to work through this and figure it out. In Germany, the idea of the player individually being quarantined, that is what the German league are putting forward as an idea. The government is likely to weigh in on Thursday whether they go along with it. So there's a possibility they could find themselves in the exact same position as Italy.
Gab, we came into this situation, didn't we, just this morning, thinking, right, France is going to say June, and then that'll be that. And now, obviously, I was talking to Frank about it. That's done now. With regards to Italy, is this just optimism? Are we going to be on the same page of France very soon?
It's difficult to tell. I think a lot of people are looking at the situation in Germany, looking at the latest numbers. There is obviously a willingness to restart, but people want to do it safely. What has annoyed the football club so far is that, you know, just as Italy is given the government's given the go ahead to athletes, professional athletes or Olympic athletes in individual sports to start training again, they seem to be treating football differently and leaving out that proviso for team sports. And they're arguing that, look, you know, there is a way to do this safely. We can do what Germany's doing. Why are you being difficult? And that's a debate that they're having over the next 48, 72 hours. But certainly, you know, if the government doesn't move from its position, or I should say, if the government embraces the position of its medical advisors, then it's not going to look too good.
Gab Marcotti, as always, thank you very much. More from Gab, of course, in the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which dropped yesterday. You can download that over on the website.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
10 years ago then to the day, that epic battle at the Camp Nou, Barcelona taking on Inter Milan. Remember, the first leg saw Inter win by 3-1, yet Barca could only manage a 1-0 win at home, meaning that Pep Guardiola's side eliminated Inter Milan, going through to the final, which of course was in Madrid. Sid Lowe and Ali Moreno here to reflect on that game. Sid, this really was the start of the good versus evil Guardiola versus Mourinho battle, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. And as you said there, the key elements of this is the fact that the final was at the Santiago Bernabeu. Real Madrid were terrified of the possibility of Barcelona winning the European Cup in their stadium. Of course, this had been built up all the way through the tournament as the rounds went on, as Barcelona got further, as Real Madrid were knocked out, that sense of fear got bigger and bigger. And genuinely, in Spain, this semi-final success for Inter Milan for Jose Mourinho was seen by many as his audition for the job at Real Madrid. He came to Real Madrid that summer, of course, the very night that they won the European Cup final at the Santiago Bernabeu, Inter Milan. The team went back. He didn't. He stayed. He finished off his contract with Real Madrid there. He got all the paperwork done. And basically what they said to him was, right, what you've just done for Inter Milan, which is to beat Barcelona, the plan now is you come to Real Madrid and you do the same for us.
It was like any Hollywood movie, but the ending didn't quite play out as many would expected, Ali. Of course, Barca getting that one goal against 10 men, you expected them to get more. But Inter, stubborn Jose Mourinho side at its very best.
And you just said and framed it as good against evil. You can also make the argument that it was the start of a certain playing style, the beautiful game, the passing and the movement of Barcelona, the possession and all the talent that the players had on the field against what Inter became, and a team that was disciplined and strong and will win 50-50 challenges, and players will be asked to play out of position, and Samuel Eto'o will drop back into defensive position, is going to do a job because that was what was required, and that was the master plan of Jose Mourinho. And so it was the personality of Mourinho and that defensive shape against what had been thought out to be sort of the best team in the world and the best style in the world and the passing and that movement and how dynamic it was for Barcelona under Pep Guardiola. So it was not only a clash of styles in terms of the personalities of the coaches involved, but it's also a clash of styles in terms of what was happening out on the field. So when you have those things coming together, it really does add elements to the story that perhaps made it even bigger than what it really was. And so to me, I just look at it from the perspective of not only the start of this Guardiola against Mourinho situation, but it also really the start of where Pep Guardiola, who was an unwilling participant in the back and forth initially between Mourinho and Guardiola, and saying, you know what, my team is going to do the talking out on the field. I don't really need to get caught up in this back and forth. I don't really need to go and fight against Mourinho in press conferences because you're never going to win that. But I think as time went on, Guardiola said, you know what, at some point I have to stick for myself. At some point, I have to stick up for my team. At some point, I'm going to have to engage. And in engaging, he went and played a game that Mourinho wanted him to play. Now, part of the reason that this becomes significant is because you think about Guardiola not wanting to engage Mourinho. Eventually, they do engage in press conferences and they do engage in physical confrontations. But here's the thing. This became a big deal, the Inter matchup and Real Madrid winning La Liga in 2012. And it only became significant because it was one of the few times in which Mourinho was able to be the Guardiola teams. But we hang on to those things because Mourinho himself made it into a big deal with his celebrations at the Camp Nou and with everything that then he carried on and saying in the press conferences that forced Guardiola into engaging in the future.
10 years on, Sid. Do we know who was responsible for turning on the sprinklers at the end to very much dampen Mourinho's celebrations?
No, we don't. I must confess that's a piece of information I've never been able to find out. It was an incredible scene, wasn't it? Mourinho running across the pitch with his finger up and Victor Valdes trying to say to him, look, don't do this. You know, you don't need to wind up the fans. You don't need to make it more about this. And Mourinho essentially saying to him, never mind that. Look, my fans are up there high, very, very high at the Camp Nou, the away fans. And then the sprinklers came on. And I think that just added to the whole thing. And as Ali says, it led to this whole kind of engagement on a level which actually Pep Guardiola didn't really want to become involved in. This kind of fighting off the pitch, these arguments off the pitch, which of course we saw come to head when they faced each other in the Champions League at the Bernabeu as Real Madrid and Barcelona manager, when Mourinho made that infamous rant now about saying why to everything and complaining about referees and a conspiracy and so on. But no, we never did find out who turned the sprinkler system on. I like the idea of it maybe being a member of the Barcelona board who nipped down from the director's box and said, I'm going to get him wet.
And of course, it's so funny because you look at Mourinho and where it started, obviously, as the translator at Bobby Robson and how much he was ingrained in Barcelona at the start of his career, and that completely flipped on his head, of course, during his time at Chelsea, happened later on at Real Madrid, but this night as well, very much a defining night in that he's very much gone to the other side.
Oh, definitely. I remember when Pep Guardiola did that famous rant now before the Champions League semi-final a couple of years later. Remember, he started by saying, I just want to remember that I was with Jose for 4 years. Now, and I think one of the things that Guardiola was expressing then was that this hurt because we were friends. They were close. There was a belief that Mourinho at some point would be Barcelona manager. There was a belief, by the way, from Mourinho that at some point he would be Barcelona manager. Of course, he was lined up to be that person when the job was given to Guardiola instead. There were two candidates fundamentally for that job. One was Guardiola, one was Mourinho. They went for Guardiola. And I just wonder if there's a sense of kind of unrequited love there. There's a sense of being rejected there, which kind of fuels Mourinho a little bit. It helps to fuel, of course, some of the antipathy towards him from Barcelona fans. So you're right, this was kind of almost like a scripted rivalry, like a kind of rivalry that on some levels, if it hadn't happened naturally, if it hadn't been real, you might have thought, well, that's a bit too cliched. It's a bit too obvious. But all of those ingredients were there.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Thanks to Sid. By the way, Ali with me a little later on Extra Time to answer your tweets alongside Frank Leboeuf. 30 years ago to this very day, a 2-1 victory over QPR at Anfield saw Liverpool crowned at champions. Part of that squad, Stevie Nicol. With us, Stevie, you provided an assist, won a penalty during that game. What are your memories of it?
The memories are obviously those two things and the end of the game. We actually went one behind, so the game itself wasn't particularly brilliant. But of course, that's not what matters. The result is what mattered, and we got the right result in the end. And as always, when you play for a club like Liverpool, when it's all said and done, it's all over, and you've won the title, it's a little bit of relief because you're expected to win it, and you expect yourself as players and as a squad, you expect to win it as well. So there's always a little tinge of relief involved. Whenever that final whistle goes and you get to walk around the stadium, give the fans a clap and just relax.
It was the fifth time you won the title with Liverpool. Was there a sort of defined way of celebrating? We'll go here, meet here, do this, do that?
No, it was the same routine as always. Just everybody have a beer after the game and in the bar at the club and then go home and we all kind of went our separate ways. As I said, everything was it was supposed to be a normal thing, winning the title for Liverpool. And so whenever we did win it, you just did what you normally did on a Saturday or whenever the game was played, what you did after the game. You know, it really was that sort of, I think I've said it a few times already, expected is the word, and we expected it. And afterwards, we treated as though we expected it.
Stevie, I know you've been asked this a million times, but did you think it was going to be 30 years then between winning the title and now?
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. Can you imagine the odds that you would have got on that? No chance. No, absolutely no chance. I was kind of coming to the stage in my career where I was thinking, will I ever get another one? Not the club. I figured that long after when I was gone, the same as the players before me had gone, Liverpool would continue to win titles particularly, because that's what Liverpool was all about. That's what they were set up to do way back when Shankly started this whole revolution at the time. And my goodness, 30 years, still hard to believe.
It's your last league title, Stevie. With hindsight, do you wish you kind of enjoyed it more, relished it more? You talk about this sense of relief.
You know, I think whilst you're playing, it's very difficult to realise what you're actually, or what you've achieved and what you're doing at the time. As I said, you're programmed to expect to win, you're programmed to win. It's all about a level of playing. And when you do win, well, so what? It's not until a little later when you finish playing and you're able to sit back and think about the things you did, be able to look back and see, well, in my case it was DVDs, obviously not, it's not the case today, and just see footage, and you can really now take it in. And even talking about it now, I'm enjoying it more thinking about it. I had a little sneaky peek at it this morning as well, just to remind me. And I sat with a smile on my face. I didn't have that during or after the game particularly. So whilst you're a pro, whilst you're playing, whilst you're winning, it's you're programmed. That's what it is. You're programmed. And it's not until that's all gone and you can sit back and go over everything and then really, really enjoy all the glory, and certainly the last time winning the league was, looking back today, a great experience.
Last word with you, Steve. It's the first chance I've had to talk to you since the quiz up against your son. How would you describe your performance?
I thought I was fine. I got harder questions than he did. He got the luck of the draw with the questions, nothing else. You know. He was lucky.
There you are. I thought there'd be an excuse. Stevie, thank you very much. In case you haven't seen the quiz, Stevie against his son, Mike, it's an all Liverpool affair. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Napa Know How.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping on over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how!
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
ESPN FC then, back on your screens tomorrow. A lot of football clubs doing great work amongst their communities at the moment. Manchester United included within that. A fan brought this to our attention, saying, "Thank you, Manchester United. As a family, we've held season tickets there for 5 generations now. About 11 years ago, my dad had a heart attack at Old Trafford just before the first game of the season. Thanks to the staff and medical team, he's still with us today. As someone over 70 with underlying health problems, my dad is self-isolating. Today, Old Trafford rang him, offering to send him a food parcel, and even said they would call him twice a week to make sure he doesn't feel lonely or isolated, just to have a chat. I hope that other football clubs are doing similar things. A heartwarming story then in difficult times, and it's not just United. Obviously, we're hearing clubs around the world doing similar things to help those fans that are struggling in these difficult times. Well, I hope that you're safe. Thank you once again for joining us on today's show. Thanks to Frank, to Gab, to Stevie, to Ali, to Sid. Till tomorrow, goodbye. Welcome into Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Alejandro Moreno and Frank Leboeuf with me today. Frank, let's start with you. Can a club like Newcastle actually attract big-name players, considering it's not an attractive city to live in like London or Manchester? Do players really look at these things or just look at the money they're going to get?
That's a very interesting question. That I would say that, of course, it's a problem when you... in England, for example, not in London, because for foreign players, you know, they check the geography, they check where the location is, and they, of course, they're going to take a decision. Newcastle has been an attraction at some point, you know, because of the money, because of the ambition that they had. David Ginola was the first French player, I think, playing there, and some others. But of course, you're going to check that out. And when I signed for Chelsea, of course I checked where Chelsea was, and to make sure that my family would find also a French school, but also some pleasant time in the city. So of course it's an important decision to make, and of course the location of the city in the map is very, very important.
But then by the end of the career, Frank, you were all about the money, yeah? Because you went to Abu Dhabi.
No, I went to Doha in Qatar first, I want to say. But of course, yeah. I came back from Chelsea to Marseille because my father was dying. And so I cut my wage by four. And so when the sheikh of Doha called me, the emir called me and said, do you want to come over? I say, why not? You know, it was interesting, you know, also sport-wise, because you go away from your career slowly but surely, and also you take some money. So it was a nice challenge for me, if I can call that a challenge.
The money, though, really was the thing, yeah, Frank.
Sure, of course. I'm not going to deny it. Of course, it was a retreat. Dessert.
Hey, Dan, by the way, if yes. Players have questions about Newcastle, I'm not sure that Frank would be the guy to be asking. We should redirect those questions towards Shaka Hislop, who, as we know, was very familiar and very much in contact with the comings and goings in the city of Newcastle. He would be the right guy to ask.
I think Shaq would give a very positive review of living in Newcastle from the stories that we've heard him share. Okay, next question. If Frank could manage any team, what team would you choose?
The Blues. What a silly question. I would love to be the
of France,
Chelsea
the Blues of
coach.
France or the Blue of Chelsea?
Oh, in France. I'm sorry, in France. In France?
No. Would you choose to be the national team manager in France or the coach of Chelsea?
Oh, that's a different job. You cannot compare. I mean, it's...
Of course you can.
Week in, week out, work when you work for a club. And it's a, let's say, a monthly job when you work for the national team. I will start with Chelsea and I will finish with the national team. Next question.
What if the national team offered you more money?
Well, I'm sure I will earn more money with Chelsea than with the national team. That's for sure.
Ali, where would you go if you could choose anywhere to coach?
Oh, well, I would have to look at the map, as Frank suggested, and a place that would be warm enough year round, so that I don't have to deal with cold and rainy weather. To be quite honest with you, it would be an honor for me to go back to Venezuela and coach my national team. Hopefully that would be under better circumstances than currently in Venezuela, and it would be without the cloud of political and social instability, but certainly that would be the pinnacle for me if I would be able to do it. And it would be warm year-round as well.
Ali, is there a football stadium in the world that you never managed to play in but wish you had?
Oh, man, that's tough. Camp Nou, Santiago Bernabeu, Maracana. And incidentally, when I say Maracana, I guess I could say just about every stadium in the 2014 World Cup in Brazil, in which I went there as a broadcaster working for ESPN, but would have loved to have been there as a player. And a couple of times with Venezuela, we were close to making it to the World Cup for the first time in our history. And 2014 may have been the time in which we were closest, although 2010 was close as well. So I would say any World Cup stadium in South Africa or any World Cup stadium in Brazil would have been great to be in a part of, because it would have meant that me and my country would have been able to make it to the World Cup for the first time ever.
What about you, Frank?
La Bombonera in Argentina and Buenos Aires.
Yeah.
The Maracana, of course. I went to Santiago Bernabeu but to watch a game when I was very young, but never played against Real Madrid there. I would have loved to play against Bayern Munich or Borussia Dortmund for the atmosphere in their stadiums.
Who was the best Italian centre-back, Frank? Maldini, Cannavaro, or Baresi?
Woo! Woo!
Ooh. I will choose Baresi. It doesn't exist anymore, those kind of players. They were real sweepers. And Baresi was the head chef of the defense. I played a couple of times in the European Cup against Baresi, and I was able to watch from my position the work he was doing for the others and how he was commanding the others, and that was a big lesson for me for the rest of my career. I mean, those four at the back with Milan, with Costa Curta, Maldini on the left side, and I think Panucci on the right side, were absolutely outstanding, and they were working very much all together. And Baresi was the all command of that. So yeah, I will pick Baresi, even if the two others were fantastic.
Last question for you, Ali, and it's a doozy. Get ready. Would you rather stay in quarantine for the rest of the year or have to spend all next year in the commentary booth with Sebi?
I mean, this is a no-doubter. 100% I will stay in quarantine the rest of the year. Yes. No chance that I'm spending any more time than I really need to with Sebastián Sarasate. I will stay here with my family in the cozy confines of my house, trying to find projects to do and things to do around my house. But no chance I am spending any additional time with Seb Salazar. That is not good for my health. I established that in the show before. I have said this many times. Sebastián Salazar is not good for my health. And so I have to look out for myself and for my family. I'll stay in quarantine.
Ali, is it me or is he angrier than ever these days?
Yes. Yes, and for no reason whatsoever. It's almost as if he's looking for reasons to get angry. And so he becomes just stressful to be around. He becomes just a negative vibe and a negative energy that I certainly do not need nowadays, or ever for that matter. I don't know what's going on with Seth, but I have to tell you, if there was ever somebody who needed a lift in the lockdown, it has to be said, let this guy walk the streets or wherever he is and somehow release some of this negative energy that he's got going on in his life.
Ali, thank you very much. Big thanks to Frank LaBeouf as well. We'll be back tomorrow, of course, for more of this nonsense. Be sure to join us on the next edition of FC.